Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Every Calorie Counts podcast. Today we have a guest on. It's been a bit since we've had a guest on. We have Haley Colanino here. She is a registered dietitian. We're going to go into, you know, her journey, her process, and talk about some gut stuff. I hope we can get into that. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me on.
Absolutely. We appreciate you taking the time. So I asked Haley to come on. Actually, it was just last week. It was one of those ones that worked out perfectly as far as timing is concerned. But I mean, I've been following you now for a little while. I even have a couple of clients that have taken some of your, I guess we'll call them, classes or seminars or things that you do, which we can throw that in later on to let people know where to find you and whatnot. But very much a fan of some of the stuff that you're putting out as far as content is concerned. And obviously it centers around gut health specifically. And as we mentioned right before recording that we'd love to get into that. But first and foremost, I'd like to take some time to get to know Haley a little bit and kind of see where the whole process started for you and how we've gone from a registered dietitian all the way to being, you know, kind of, you know, a registered dietitian that solely focuses on gut, not solely, but focuses on gut health. So why don't you start with giving us a little bit of that initial background?
Yeah, definitely. And if you hear meowing, I'm sorry. My cats are being very obnoxious this morning. But so I started coaching in 2018. And at that time, you know, I had already been personal training in person for, I don't know, 4-ish years. I knew very early on that like I wanted to personal train. I like didn't even want to go to college. I was just like, yeah, mom and dad, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to personal train. I'm going to work with athletes. I'm going to work with people in a gym. And they were like, no, like you need to go to college. So I was like, all right, whatever. And I was figure skating at the time. I figure skated growing up. And that's where I got introduced to like personal training. My dad worked out growing up. So I remember seeing that. I started going to the gym with him in high school and doing just like the elliptical and all that basic stuff that everybody does in high school. And then once I started looking at colleges, I wanted to continue figure skating and I synchronized figure skated. So a team, and I only looked at a couple of schools. I was not the best grade wise in college, just simply because much like I'm getting better at now, I was doing way too many things. You know, I was running clubs, I was teaching boot camps, I was working at 3 different gyms, but when I was looking for colleges, I applied to the University of New Hampshire because I wanted to skate on their team. And that was actually the only school that I got into, which was, you know, just kind of fate in that way. So I skated, I was personal training. I didn't really know what I wanted to study that first year. I don't even remember what my major was when I went in. It was like athletic training. In my mind, right. I was like, that's personal training, right? My first class taught me about wrapping somebody's ankle. And I was like, oh, yeah. That is not what I wanted. So I just switched to nutrition on a whim. I was like, well, that goes well with personal training. Yeah, sure. Here we go. And I very, very quickly fell in love. And after my first year, I was like, oh, I'm going to pair these two. This is what I'm going to do. Done. Like that's happening. But I wanted to be a dietitian for a football team for a while. So that obviously didn't happen, thankfully. So throughout my undergrad, you know, I was personal training. I was working in gyms and I started learning about the online coaching space and bodybuilding. I knew throughout my undergrad I wanted to bodybuild someday, but I also didn't want to not have the college experience. I wanted to drink and have all of that, and I'm glad that I did. But at the time, while I was going through my undergrad, you know, I was still reading bodybuilding forms and all of these different things, because obviously Instagram wasn't really a thing in like 2014, 2015, like it is now. And then once I graduated, I hired my first coach and I competed a few times. And that's when I was like, I could do what she does. You know, I could have a business like that. And then I started one. I just had people start inquiring because throughout my undergrad, I gave a lot of like talks in person. Like I gave nutrition talks at Air Force bases to people in the police academy. And I just was very well connected, luckily, through that program. Right. And I realized that I loved educating people. I wasn't really sure what I would do with it at first. I kind of found online coaching while I was personal training and didn't know that I would be able to make it. I mean, I'm sure most new coaches feel that way. I was like, I don't know about this. I have no idea how to run a business. I'm just taking people's money and telling them what to do and it's going okay, but who the hell knows what's going to happen, right? So that's where I started my business the first time in 2018. And at the time, you know, I was competing. I was really just looking to coach whoever the heck I could get. So mainly lifestyle clients. I would take a couple competitors as the years went on. And I did not take the normal path of like a wannabe dietitian, where usually after undergrad, you go right into your dietetic internship. I did not do that. I applied, but I didn't get into any of the ones I wanted. So I was like, hey, I'm just going to stay. I was in New Hampshire at the time. I'm going to personal train full time. That gym ended up being a really great opportunity for me because they let me basically take charge of starting a nutrition program there. So I started teaching those clients, you know, how to track macros for the ones that it made sense, right? How to build balanced meals, what they need to eat around their workout and all of that. And that's where I really learned that I liked working with like the general population. That year that I took between undergrad and grad school, I also worked part-time at my undergrad. So I got a position, it was like an intern paid position with the football team there. And I was teaching the players how to do macros and all of this stuff. And for reference, I started tracking macros very young, on and off, you know, before college, just because I don't know how I heard about MyFitnessPal, probably the forums and stuff online. And then in college, I developed a little bit of a disordered relationship with it. I'm sure like a lot of us in the industry have had, never full-blown disordered eating, but I learned throughout the years how to use macros strategically for myself. And then wanted to show that to everybody, because to me, and I still feel this way, it's a way that you can understand how to nourish your body, but still eat the way you want to eat, right? And change your body. Mm-hmm. So I was working in person. I really had no idea what I was going to do. I started taking a handful of online clients. And then I was like, I'm not necessarily happy here in New Hampshire anymore. Like, I can't keep working these crazy hours at the gym and part-time at the school and have a handful of clients. I need to kind of choose. So that's where I just kind of said, let's just fuck around and find out. Am I allowed to swear on this? I assume so.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. And I applied to grad school, one of the ones that I did not get into previously. Because again, you know, I had very average grades, which getting into these programs is not enough. So having taken a couple years off and having had like actual experiences that catered towards that program, because my master's degree is in sports nutrition and exercise physiology. So I was like, let's just see what happens. I didn't tell anyone because I was like, there's no way I'm going to get in. Right. So that happened. I ended up getting in. So I gave my notice at the gym, kind of uprooted my entire life.
So you think they look more favorable, you're saying, because of the additional experience that you had?
Yes.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. So it worked out for you, taking that little bit of break. Mm-hmm.
It did. Yeah. And that's where, you know, I like talking to people who have gone through or are going through like the route to become a dietitian, because it is so challenging. It is. And it's not even the courses that are challenging. It's just they expect so much from you in order to actually get into one of the dietetic programs. So I was a coach first. I was not a dietitian first. And I practiced within my scope. I mean, I'm not one of those people that's like, you have to be a dietitian to do meal plans. You have to be a dietitian to this. Like, I very much don't feel that way, but I know a lot of people that are dietitians do. I probably just don't, because that's not like how I was raised in the space, so to speak. I was raised by the bodybuilding forums and Jason Theobald and Austin Stout and all of these people, you know, that you learn from along the way. So it was almost just like a bonus at that point that I was able to become a dietitian. So, you know, I got into grad school and at that time, I was being coached by someone. I was coached on and off for the majority of this time, but I had competed a few times and I was like recovering from that. Got to grad school, knew literally no one, got a cat, saved my life. That was amazing because I was lonely and that was great. And then I got offered a position as an assistant coach with, I don't know if you know, Cody McBroom, or now it's the coaching method. So I worked for them for two and a half years while I went through grad school, which was perfect because I didn't necessarily have to get clients on my own. I was still doing the Instagram thing, but I was able to have a pretty full client roster during grad school. And at that time, it was mostly just like, you know, the fat loss, the reverse dieting, like typical clients. And during my graduate studies, because my dietetic internship was combined, so I did my master's and my DI, which is what they call it. And I think now you have to do that. Like, I don't think you can be a dietitian without a master's anymore as of 2024. But during that time, you know, I got to take some really cool courses that I do think helped me get more into the functional space. Like, I took endocrinology, I took nutritional biochem like three different times, because that is a big a big part of it. And all of it helped me have that background. So I'm like, yeah, I like can pick this stuff up so easily. Right. So while I was working for that other team, I started seeing a larger rise in the amount of clients that I just couldn't get to lose weight. And I was doing literally everything. You know, I was having my boss and other coaches look at this and they were like, change this macro, change that macro. And I'm like, I have tried everything. You know, we have done carb cycling. We have done intermittent fasting. We've done modified keto. You know, we're doing cardio, no cardio. And I was like, something has to give here. So that's where I really started diving into more of their internal health, especially, you know, after having taken that endocrinology course. And that was also when functional stuff was on the rise, which was helpful because everyone started talking about it. So that's when, you know, I was kind of knowing that I wanted to do more than just the fat loss, reverse diet stuff. And there wasn't really a market for that within that company. So I had a couple clients that I was doing GI maps with and assisting the other coaches on that team to do that because I was the only one at the time that knew how. I had known how to read blood work for a while. And I was like, yeah, like there's more to this than just calories in and calories out. Right. And I'm not saying that that doesn't work. Like at the end of the day, it is calories in or calories out, but there's something internally
it all works together.
That calories out equation, right? Your body's not working effectively for whatever reason. And then the more that I started like thinking about it and talking about it, the more clients, especially women, that I'd have coming to me telling me, you know, I've been dealing with this GI issue for 10 years and I've gone to so many doctors and all they tell me is I have IBS and to eat low FODMAP and nothing changes. So that's when I started, you know, thinking that I wanted to start my own practice. At that time, you know, I had recently finished grad school, studying for my RD exam, took the RD exam, passed it. That was horrible, but we lived. It's fine. That sucked. But, and then I was like, all right, you know, I've always wanted to start a private practice, as they call it, or just like a
coaching
practice, right? So once I had my RD, I was like, all right, here we are. We're doing it. We're going out on our own again. And I started Girls Fuel. And that was almost 2 years ago now. And then like the focus in gut health just kind of happened. I didn't do it on purpose, which I think that's what happens for a lot of people when they niche down. Like I was definitely a generalist and I still am. I just like talking about gut health and that's what my audience seems to like. So I talk about it the most, but that's like actually not all, what all my clients are. But over the years, you know, talking about different things on social media and kind of just talking to the clients that I get, or even just like the leads that I get of what they've struggled with over the years, I just noticed that there was a huge knowledge gap in terms of like, well, what is normal? You know, how should you feel? Are you being gaslit by your doctors? You know, how do you support your internal health and how does that translate outward? Because it does, right? That's probably the biggest missing piece is internal health. And when I say internal health, I also mean mindset, right? Because you guys know this, the client that can't chill the hell out in here is going to have the hardest time making progress. And for those of you listening, when I said in here, I pointed to my brain. So that's where, you know, with Girls Fuel, I just started talking about gut health more. And now I feel like I was joking with my friend, Sarah Bishop, who you guys might also know the other day. And I was like, I feel like I've made it. Like, this is what I've always wanted. And this sounds so lame and almost like, I can't think of the word, but this sounds lame, but I'm like, I feel like I'm finally where I want to be. Like I get referrals from people that I don't even know. Like people know about me and I don't know what I did to get this to happen.
Right.
But it's kind of what I've always wanted to be, more of an influential voice in the industry, just like the people that came before me, the people that I looked up to. And that's kind of where we're at and why I talk so much about poop.
There you go. Why I talk so much about poop. Exactly. Perfect way to end that. So there's a lot that you touched on there, and I didn't want to, you were on a roll, so I didn't want to interrupt you too much there, which is typically my thing. I'll interrupt like crazy, but you were on a good roll and I feel like we did get to know you pretty well there. So, but listen, I want to backtrack there. You had brought up macros a while back, and being able to fuel your body well, and really looking at it from a state of utilizing that for nourishment, right? But I think one big thing that we run into a lot in terms of an argument against macros, because I think it's really black and white sometimes, unfortunately. Yeah, and you know, I even want to eventually get into the whole calorie deficit thing too, in terms of like that, and you know, why that's not the only, again, it's not black and white, right? But yet we see it touted as Black Whey because it makes good content, right? But anyway, at the end of the day, macros and meal plans, right? It seems like there's this black and white concept there that one is good and one is bad, depending on who you speak to and what coach you're working with. But why don't you talk to us a little bit about how you kind of figured out and what was that entry point for you? Maybe it was your own process, because it was for me, in terms of how you were using macros and how detrimental it could have been, right? But then how you kind of streamline that process for yourself to make it something where it's not only a good thing as it relates to, you know, things like our gut health, but internal function in general. In my opinion, it might be the way of going about getting the most optimal outcomes from your diet in terms of your functional health, in terms of your gut health.
Yeah, definitely. So like I'm going to backtrack on that a little bit. Like when I was growing up, I did not have the best relationship with food. And I honestly didn't even realize that until recently. I was like recording a solo podcast and I was like, it wasn't normal that the first thing I would think of when I came home from school was eating as much as I possibly could because my parents weren't home. So I was like, all right, not normal. You know, was always the chubbier friend of my friend group. So when I got to college, like that first year, I was like, oh, I can eat whatever I want. You know, I'm drinking for the first time. So I didn't really drink before college, smoked some marijuana and did all that. But I was like, wow, freedom. And that's where I started realizing like how I actually liked to eat. And it was on the healthier side once I got past that initial, like I can have chicken nuggets every day if I want to, right? Yeah. So come like the end of my freshman year was when I was like really serious about tracking. And this was in 2013. And I was like, I was learning about macros in my nutrition courses. Like those were like the most basic ones that you'd learn about, but more so from a standpoint of like, this is what your food is made of. Right.
Yeah,
one of my teachers like showed us my fitness pal and was like, yeah, this is something that we'll use in our practices sometimes, whatever.
Oh, did they really? I wouldn't think you were even going to go there. I thought you were just talking about the idea of like an actual macronutrient, an energy yielding nutrient. I didn't realize that they actually went into, you know, my fitness pal and stuff. And that's cool that your professor actually gave you guys that kind of a tool.
It was just like a screenshot on a slide, if I remember correctly.
Okay,
she had like, you know, the pie chart that's like carbs, fat, and like talking about like balance kind of thing. And then I think a lot of people that I knew were tracking. I was already reading bodybuilding forms. So I started tracking. And you know, when you enter your information in my fitness pal, and I'm a 5 foot woman, like I'm not a big human. So naturally it's like 1,000 calories a day. And I'm like, yep, I can do this. Here we go. So then I just thought that that was what I was supposed to eat. I wanted to lose weight. I started lifting. I was lifting excessively by that point. Once I stopped skating, end of sophomore year, I was probably lifting like almost every day, running, lifting, just because I didn't know any better. And I was like, more is better, right? I think a lot of us go through that. And then I was just tracking my macros and eating 1100 to 1200 calories every day because, again, like I wanted to lose weight and that's what my fitness pal told me to do. And did I lose weight? Yeah. Did I feel confident for the first time in my entire life? Yes. But then it got to a point where I was like, all right, I'm where I want to be. I lost 10 pounds, but now what? And then I got to the point where I was petrified to eat more because my fitness pal does not tell you how to reverse diet. Neither does college. Yeah. So that's where I was stuck there for a while. I was stuck there for a couple of years. And it wasn't until I hired my own coach in 2017-ish that I did my first reverse diet. And that's where, you know, I started to see those changes. But from there, I think the biggest thing that I value of macro tracking now, and I tell this to my clients all the time, and I do not have all clients track for reference. Like if somebody is going to be very triggered by it, or if they're just like so far from even needing that, like they don't even know what a protein is, like I'm not going to have them track. But I do think it's a very valuable tool, and something that I've started doing in the last couple of years is encouraging my girls, especially, to be like, hey, this is your minimum amount that you need to eat. I would rather you go over this slightly. And again, I don't work with competitors anymore. Most of these are lifestyle clients. I would rather you go over this slightly than be under it, because your body needs at least this much to have energy. You wonder why you're sleeping like shit. Your periods feel horrible and you're anxious. You're not eating enough. Your body isn't running on enough, doesn't have enough fuel. So yeah, your stress hormones are going to be high. Your thyroid's going to be sluggish. And that sounds scary. I don't usually say it that scarily, but I use them now as a tool to say, hey, you know, you need to learn how to take care of your body. I wish that was something that we were taught in school. We were never taught how much to eat, how to eat 3 balanced meals and have snacks and things like that. So now I think it's a very, very valuable learning tool, but it isn't black or white, and it can't be, right? Like I have clients all the time where they've tracked for years doing it the wrong way, kind of like I did in the beginning, where I just sat at really low calories for years and years, fluctuating and gaining and losing the same 10 pounds. And when they finally can show themselves like, yeah, I can eat 1,800, 2,000 calories and maintain my weight and eat out with my family, take untracked meals, take a vacation and not track the whole time and trust my body, that's where the magic happens, in my opinion. Like, that is the best thing in the whole world. So that's where, you know, I educate clients using macros, whether it's talking about like how to build your plate, portion sizes using your hands, MyFitnessPal. I very rarely do meal plans, maybe like 1 in 20 clients, just because I don't feel that that is a way to learn for most people. And it's just a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Learn or sustain for the most part. Yeah. Those two things go hand in hand, obviously. I think for me, it was one of those things, just to add on to that whole concept there is, you know, I was into macros very, very early on with one of the more popular coaches who kind of, you know, put it on the map and kind of coined it. And, you know, originally there, as we were kind of entering into that whole space. And how old are you, Haley, if you don't mind me asking?
28.
Yeah. So both of you guys are a little bit too, maybe a little bit before your time, a little bit before there, where it was really a industry in terms of the fitness world, where there was a lot of impact on young individuals and eating disorders and uncontrolled relationship as far as food is concerned. Macros were actually entered into the picture as kind of being an answer at the time to this issue that we were seeing as far as eating disorders are concerned. But the fact of the matter is, it was a very early entry into that concept. And the feedback that I would get from my coach in a lot of cases when we switched over to the concept from meal plan to, hey, let's track our macros on this, you know, for me, it was fitday.com way back. But the bottom line is, this was before cell phones and whatnot. So we were literally doing it on desktops. But it was shut up, Marina. It was, the whole concept was if it fits your macros. So it was literally a concept where it's like, you know, hey, I've never done this before, me personally. So now I'm emailing my coach. Can I have these? Because before this, the only thing that was allowed was brown rice and chicken breast. You know what I mean? Sweet potatoes and ground beef. That was it. Those were what meal plans were for years prior to this. So for me, it was one of those things where I'm like, can I have cheese? And I would just get an email back and literally just said, if it fits your macros. And then I would say, okay, well, can I have this? And I would get the same email back until it kicked in, where it was like, okay, so you're telling me I can have anything I want as long as I'm hitting my macros. It was like, yeah. And then for me, it was, I went into that first interaction with the coach tracking my macros right into a contest prep. So it was whatever it was, like 6 straight months of just dieting. I got peeled, but I was eating nothing by the end. I have a very adaptive metabolism. You know, even whatever it is now, 15 years later, I still have to eat 1,400 calories to get stage ready. It's just the way it goes. Yeah, for weeks at a time for me. Very adaptive both ways too. Obviously, it works in both ways. So now I'm in that deficit for as long as I've been, for the first time ever. I come out of it very low body fat. You know the drill there. It's, you know, those hunger hormones are dysregulated. Everything's out of whack. And it's just, you know, obviously we get that first bite of food and everybody here has been through it where it's just go, 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 go. Again, I mentioned adaptive metabolism. So now I'm in this spot where it's like, okay, let's, you know, there wasn't really much talk about reverse dieting there. It was just like, let's go right into an off season and have a quote unquote rebound. So we're going to jack you full of food. Right. And now we're still on this if it fits your macros approach. And I'm struggling with this new concept of food and this new relationship of food. And it's just, you know, hey, here's 400 grams of carbs, because again, a very adaptive metabolism, right? Figure it out and eat everything that you want to eat as long as it fits your macros. So at that point, especially with the lack of education around this concept at that time, I found, you know, Turkey Hill frozen yogurt that had 0 grams of carbs. Zero fat, sorry. It was like 20 grams of carbs per serving and like 5 grams of protein. So in my head, I'm doing calculation. I'm like, well, shit, if I make it through work with eating just, you know, ground beef and broccoli all day, I can come home and have an entire half gallon of ice cream, right? And somewhere along the way, I even tried to learn how to save my fat. So I'd have 99% lean ground turkey, right, all day. And then I would save all my until later. And what I ended up with was, you know, because the turkey thing was legitimately like a 3-year process of me eating turkey or probably like a 2-year process, maybe me eating turkey all day to save my fats and carbs and then eating like a glutton at night. And it turned into a sulfur intolerance and then eventually a small intestinal bacterial an opportunistic growth. Candida. So, yeah, I mean, you could only imagine, obviously. So it's like, you know, again, where I was kind of going with the whole macro concept is like, it can be your worst enemy if you're using it in this way where you're really trying to, you know, I guess it's lack of concept when it comes to nourishing the body or really fueling the body, right? And utilizing nutrition from a functional aspect and just utilizing nutrition to, you know, enhance enjoyment and comfort and all these different things. And now we're using macros to be able to kind of justify that, if that makes sense, right? And how, you know, if we flip that though, and we do start looking at it from a nourishment standpoint, for us, it's one of those things where we're very big on chronometer, right? MyFitnessPal chronometer, whatever. That's not really the point. But the fact of the matter is we ask everybody a check-in. What's your chronometer username and login? It's one of our standard check-in questions. So now that, you know, chronometer's system saves their information. So now I can pull up everybody's chronometer and we could actually go in there and look and say, okay, here's the amount of nutrient density we're seeing from this person's diet, you know, are the recommended foods that we have in there in this person's diet. And then again, depending on what, you know, phase somebody's in or what we're trying to accomplish with somebody, we might even have specific diet structure that we're looking at where it's like, hey, we want to see, you know, you're in we want to see these, you know, antibacterial food components in your food on a consistent daily basis. So again, it's one of those things where it can be used in totally different ways to get totally different outcomes. You know, it's not just a black and white concept that we were talking about before where it's good or it's bad. Anything can be good. Anything can be bad. And I think that macros get a really bad rap as it comes to specifically gut function, gut health, you know, improving your digestion, or just trying to analyze it from a digestive standpoint. I think one of the biggest things, and I'll stop talking here in a second, that I hear people voice over is like when you're tracking macros and your client has some sort of a gastrointestinal issue, now it's too hard to comprehend what's causing that issue because of the variety of different foods and yada, yada, yada. Versus if they're on a meal plan, it's more standardized. And now we have this easy concept to look at. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, that's really helpful. And I'm sorry that happened to your gut. That's really sad. I mean, I had candida as well, so not fun. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think macros, like you said, it's all about how you use it and how you're taught to use it, right? There are so many things that can be done wrong and in turn lead to gut issues, whether it's that like macro hoarding, which is like what you were doing. Yeah. And I think I just forget about these things because one of the first things that I'll say to almost every single client is like, this is the meal structure that I want you to hit, right? So we kind of bite that in the butt, but that, you know, overconsumption of vegetables, XYZ. But as far as like for gut cases, meal plan versus macros, usually when somebody is having a gut issue, and I'm sure you've seen this, it's not necessarily the food that's causing the symptoms anymore, right? Like if you have candida or you have SIBO, the majority of things that you eat are going to cause an issue. So that's where I'll temporarily use elimination diets.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
We can tell like, hey, there's research to show that these higher FODMAP foods are contributing to fermentation in the gut and gas and pain and issues when you have a bacterial overgrowth. So we keep FODMAPs out or as low as possible because nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. And then you can just eat, right? I'll give you a recommended food list. I'll give you meal ideas. I know it gets harder when we eliminate foods, but that's where, you know, you can still track your macros and you can still build balanced meals. We're just going to avoid the triggers that we expect to be there. And that's always been super easy for my clients for the most part. Not easy because, you know, doing elimination diet's hard, but easy as in when they can do it, symptoms are a lot less severe during that time. So I don't think you need a meal plan to do that because kind of like we've talked about, with a meal plan, unless your like coach is really educating you on how to make smart swaps, you feel like in a box with what you can eat and what you can't. Like I tell my girls all the time, like, even if you're in a gut phase, I want you to enjoy your meals. Like they shouldn't suck. Maybe, you know, 90% of the time they shouldn't suck. You shouldn't dread eating them. I want you to be able to go out to eat if you want to. And obviously we'll talk about it beforehand and make a game plan, but macros will help you do that. I'll even have clients where they just don't track during gut phases just because you can guess that a lot of people that end up with gut issues are very high stress, high strung, and adding eliminating foods on top of tracking is just a lot of mental load. So once they have like their meal structure down, especially if they're, you know, around maintenance, usually in a gut phase, I keep people at like a lower end of maintenance just to not overburden the digestive tract. I'm like, hey, you know, keep your meal structure the same. Build balanced meals like you have been, but you don't have to track. Just stay low FODMAP or whatever the elimination that we need is, and you're going to be fine. And I find that reduces a lot of mental stress for people during those protocols.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And that's got to be such a big part of it in terms of understanding the individual client and what is really going to cause that higher level. Sometimes, you know, it's the same type A individual where you take the tracker away and they're like that in and of itself is such a thing that we have to get over. So yeah, it really comes down to that client and coach relationship there. But I think the next question I have for you is where did that introduction to specifically the gut, which again, I know we've kind of already went over the fact that you're not this exclusive, you know, gut, you know, master person, but at the same time, obviously that's where a lot of your content lies. And, you know, it's always an interesting and good conversation with how important it is. But where did that, I know for me, I feel like it was one of those ones where the industry took a little while and then obviously it became popular, right? So for my first introduction was Dr. Mark Pimentel, Allison Seebecker, Narola Jacoby, right? And like, you know, like a completely totally different world at the time. Like it wasn't even around what year was it for you? Do you remember where you started to get into this gut health stuff? And yeah, maybe that's the first question.
It wasn't that long ago. It was probably 2021 when I started like seeing people use GI maps, when I started seeing people talk about it. And then I'm very much the person that like reads something once and then just goes down so many rabbit holes and writes so many notes in Google Docs and I like to connect dots and really understand like whys behind things. So I started going through that. And then I had a couple clients who had gut issues. I would like consult with other coaches to make sure that I was good and like on the right track. And then I realized I was good at it. And then I ended up with my own whole slew of gut issues later that year, end of 21, 20, early 22, which I could tell you why, just due to stress and diet and literally everything, right? So I had SIBO, Candida, H. pylori, a parasite, like literally all of those things. And I went I put myself through a gut health phase, a protocol, and my adrenals were also trashed at that point, big goose egg for cortisol. So I felt naturally really, really horrible. And I was like, this isn't normal. And how can we help people not get to this point? Or at least help people feel like they know what to do? Because if I hadn't like been exposed to it already, I would have been so lost, so to speak, of what to do. So that's kind of where it started. And then from there, I took a course with another dietitian on the GI map and gut health. And again, I picked it up very, very quickly, I think. And from there, I started talking about it and getting more clients where that was their case. And now those are like my favorite cases to take on. And a lot of times it is more than just the gut, right? We have to think about where the immune system plays a role. And then obviously downstream issues, hormones, blood sugar. But now I would say, you know, for me, my favorite cases are these gut health cases, because a lot of these men and women have struggled for so long and they just haven't had a practitioner really hear them, hear their story, hear their history, and help them understand, well, like, why is this happening? How can I fix it? And will I ever be normal again? And just being super like empathetic for them. Like my favorite part of coaching is the relationships. Like I end up forming such, I'm sure you guys do too, but such strong relationships with my clients and, you know, being able to show myself like, hey, I'm like really good at helping people with this. It comes naturally to me, luckily. And I have a lot of clients that do really well. And that's kind of where it took off. And then over the last couple of years, whenever I would think about writing content, I was just like, I want to talk about the gut. I want to talk about the gut. And that's just kind of what happened. It was very organic, which I really liked. Like it didn't feel forced that I was getting into this specialty. And I really love it. So that helps.
So you mentioned working with another dietitian. Was it something you feel like you did a little bit more self-education on, or was there anybody in particular that you worked with or maybe watched from afar? And go ahead.
Yeah. So over the years, I've mentored under many coaches, and I think that that's super, super valuable. And that's why I mentor coaches now. I've always like wanted to do that, but I don't even know what the order was, but I started like jumping in on like Jason Theobald's free sessions whenever he would have those, or like paid classes. I mentored with Austin Stow. And then the course I did on the GI map was with Dasha. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, honestly. She's a dietitian too. So I did that. And then until I felt confident, I would like consult mostly with Austin over the years. And then, you know, over the last few, I've just kind of been good. And then I have friends that are like, kind of like my generation of coaching too, where we'll like co-work and hang out and bounce cases. Yeah. as we need to. But mentorship played a huge role because, again, you know, I didn't learn most of this in school. You won't. So that's where taking courses and asking for help when you need it is going to be key. And I know for some coaches, there's a lot of pride with that. They're like, I don't want to have to pay another coach to teach me. Like, I'm going to learn it on my own. But this is serious stuff. Like, you can mess somebody up. And that's why sometimes when I see GI protocols from other coaches and I'm like, oh my God, you don't even know what these supplements do. This is horrible. I'm like, all right, like, everyone needs to swallow their pride and like hire somebody to help them until they're confident. Yeah. And then imposter syndrome goes away, confidence goes up. But that's what it was for me, taking a lot of courses, literally any course I could sign up for. I went to in-person conferences like Elite Physique University with John Gorman and Jason. First couple of years they did that. So I just love learning. So like that helped.
I didn't know you had the ties with Austin. We're obviously that's kind of a prerequisite for us to work with X amount of clientele is to have a mentorship with Austin. So that's cool. That obviously, I guess that kind of speaks volumes. That's maybe why and obviously the content in and of itself is very Haley. It's not like it screams Austin by any stretch of imagination. Austin doesn't really have like very, sexy content, and he would tell you that himself. But at the same time, I guess maybe there's some underlying tones there that really drew me in a little bit. But I had something and I just got completely and totally thrown off.
I have something.
Go ahead.
Okay. So you mentioned imposter syndrome, and that's something that obviously like a lot of new coaches experience, especially when you get into something as like endless as gut health and functional health and all this stuff. Like, so I guess my question for you is like, you definitely probably at some point felt that, but how did you overcome it? Obviously with like education and mentorships and stuff, but actually being able to feel the confidence to be able to help these individuals and be confident about your process.
Honestly, a lot of fucking around and finding out.
Yeah.
Because I think the best way to gain confidence is just to do something over and over again. And if you do something wrong, to be able to like see that and then redirect. But like I mentioned, you know, I don't mentor with anybody anymore. I mean, I'm taking a course right now. It's a functional immunology course, but that's kind of like a next level thing. It's very, very deep dive. But anyway, but like over the years, you know, I had people that I could ask questions to if I needed to. So I am the kind of person that would try not to ask questions because I wanted to be able to do it myself. But if I needed to, like knowing that I had that support was really helpful in overcoming the imposter syndrome, but then also just like seeing that people would get results, you know, seeing that my clients were getting better. And I wasn't afraid to say that I didn't know. Like, I'll tell my clients like, hey, I'm not sure. I'm going to like consult with my friend and see what she thinks about your case. And then I'm going to get back to you. But a lot of it is just repetition and accepting that you're not going to have all of the answers. I think that's really all it was.
Not to give him even more love here, but that's why I really appreciate Austin and kind of the process that he allows for us after mentoring with him for some time, where he and I can just have a phone call now. And it's one of those things where it's not really a full on, I don't know, like whatever, quote unquote, mentorship call. I'm not sure what that would look like, but you know, it's not, you know, it's me telling him, hey, here's this case that I'm at. This is what I'm seeing. Here's all the information that I have. You know, this is the rabbit hole that I went down. Here's my X, Y, and Z thought process. What do you think? And then maybe he'll just add to that. Or in a lot of cases, honestly, it just ends up being validation that allows me to kind of move forward with another level of confidence there. So it's not necessarily, it's just, you know, is validation the right word? I think validation is the right word there. It's just kind of getting that second opinion to make sure that, you know, we have that review, I guess you could say, and we're on the right track, if you would. Does that make sense? My other question, and this one might be a little, I don't know how comfortable you are with it, but one of the biggest issues that I see, because you mentioned a couple of times being gaslit by by a physician, right? And I think, and we, you know, where are you located right now, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm in Tampa, Florida.
You're in Florida. Okay. And obviously, but you're from the Northeast here, which is where we're at. We're in Jersey. So, you know, it's one of those things that's very noticeable to me, and at least in our local area where we're predominantly based in terms of our clientele, that it seems like no matter how difficult it could be to work with some physicians, preface it with that, you know, in different fields, because I can see it a lot with OBGYNs. I can see it a lot different. And I know people will always have their different opinions with this, but the number one physician that's hardest to work with, in my opinion, is the gastrointestinal doc, right? The GI doc. And getting, honestly, seemingly anywhere positive for most people, it seems like it's, you know, just always a matter of here's this blanket diagnosis. And, well, let's endoscopy, colonoscopy, blanket diagnosis, you know, maybe throw some antibiotics at it and that's, or some Miralax, and that's really where we go with that. And it doesn't seem to be a lot of, you know, long-term supports or you know, even using the word healing going on there from a gut perspective for their patients. How do you navigate, if you have any feelings on that or want to elaborate on that from your perspective, please, but like, how do you navigate that whole patient-doctor relationship for somebody that's coming to you with gut health issues? It's already been to the doctor and was told it's just IBS-C, here's this medication.
That's a really great question. And I think, you know, a lot of it is I will never disrespect somebody's doctor, right? I'll always just kind of like hear them out. And that's all people really want, is to feel like they're heard, where a lot of doctors, I think, don't leave patients feeling that way. So I also think they don't necessarily have the education that we do in the functional space. And that's a big missing piece, to where they're just taught like, all right, you know, they have XYZ symptom, they're constipated, you know, here, let's recommend this. And then if that doesn't work, we'll try maybe a SIBO test. But even then, kind of like you said, it takes a very long time for them to get to that point where they test for anything else besides doing a scope. I have had clients who cannot afford to pay out of pocket for testing, because that's what it ends up being working with me. I'm an out-of-network dietitian for people. So I would say 99% of clients cannot use insurance. So we'll utilize their doctors and be like, hey, okay, you know what to ask for now. You know how to advocate for yourself. So that's a lot of what I'll teach my clients and talk to them about, of like, how to ask the right questions if they're going to utilize their doctor, what to ask for in terms of labs, how to talk about their symptoms in a way that their doctor might actually be like, oh, it's something more than just IBS. So that's something we'll talk about a lot. I've had clients, and these were probably bigger than gut cases, that I've talked to their doctors, and when they were more specialist usually, just to get a better understanding of, you know, where they're at, maybe medications that they are on and herb interactions. But I think the biggest thing to remember when it comes to doctors is they don't have the same amount of time to spend with their patients as we do. And that's, I think, where a lot of clients struggle, is, you know, their doctor sees them for 5 seconds every year, and that they don't understand their lifestyle at all. So forgetting about testing and supplements, like the first thing that we do when we get a new client is we figure out what in their lifestyle may be causing some of these GI issues. Like, are you skipping breakfast? Are you having coffee on an empty stomach every single day? Do you barely sleep at night? Like, all of these things add up, and doctors don't usually have the time or necessarily the knowledge to even ask those things. So that's where I think it needs to start, is like understanding where in our life we can make these small changes so that it doesn't get to be something bigger. But then I think for a lot of my clients, it just comes to a point where they're like, yeah, you know, I've tried going to my doctor, I've gone to multiple doctors, and they just don't hear me, or they don't like have any other resources for me. So I'm just going to work with you, and that's it. You know, and they just put all of their trust into me, which I'm very, very thankful for. And again, like I said, especially if money's a thing, I'm like, yeah, ask your doctor if they can run this for you, because we can use it and it might be able to be covered through your insurance. But I think just understanding that there's a big difference between like how someone like myself, like a functional practitioner, operates versus just like a Western medicine doctor.
Is there any specific labs that you're typically going to as it relates to their insurance and their physician, outside of blood work specifically, to be able to help analyze some of these GI cases that you find to be actually efficient?
Efficient, not always. Yeah. Like ideally we get a GI map stool test, which, you know, I can get between 350, 375, which isn't terrible. You know, some companies and practitioners will charge you like $500-$600 for the test, which is absurd. But most doctors don't even know what that is or how to use it. So
it's certainly not a GI map. My thing was going to be, sometimes they will run a stool map, but unfortunately, again, the efficiency of some of these tests just isn't, or the efficacy just isn't there sometimes. And they're very surface level, if you would, relative to a GI map.
Yeah. So you can ask for a stool test. A lot of times they can test for different parasites. You can ask for an H. pylori breath test or a SIBO breath test. And those are two that are usually pretty easy for doctors to have you do, and they'll usually get them for you. I have found, though, just the GI map is a little bit more sensitive for detecting those types of bacterial overgrowth, but it's better than nothing. I don't know if this is unfortunate or not, but what I've seen with clients that do go that route and they get the breath tests and they're negative, their doctor will give them antibiotics anyway. Which, you know, there's a lot of controversy on, you know, should you use antibiotics for something like SIBO, or is the herbal approach better? One's honestly not better than the other. It truly just depends on the person's health as a whole, right? So like on the GI map, for example, we'd see, is your good bacteria already trashed? Because if it is, herbal might be better. So that way it's not as aggressive. But as long as like whatever you go, antibiotics or herbal, you're supporting your body with the right things, like you're taking the right probiotics, you're eating a diverse diet, you know, you have intestinal lining support, you're supporting stomach acid, both can be great. Because I've had clients where their symptoms are either just so severe or mental load, lifestyle load, they just can't wait 12 weeks to get through an herbal protocol. They don't have the mental capacity to take that many supplements for that long. And we're like, all right, go to your doctor. You have this parasite that we found, show it to them, and they're going to give you an antibiotic. And that helps a lot of people. And I don't think that that's a bad thing at all. We just make sure that the support is there.
100%. I think the antibiotics in a lot of cases are, we overdo the medication thing, the Western medication thing sometimes in our world, and create this negative stigma around it so much so that we're blinded to the different ways that it can be used. I think how you use these things sometimes is the most important aspect of it. And even, you know, like you just mentioned, somebody that doesn't have the 12 weeks, you know, I think motivation in a lot of cases, we could get at a much higher level when it comes to getting somebody results initially. And if we can get somebody those immediate results, it's almost like, okay, you could even, whatever, I don't know, lack of better verbiage here, kickstart a process here with those antibiotics and then follow that up with a much more, you know, a long-term efficient or efficacious process there that's going to allow that person to get more use out of those antibiotics. And maybe somebody else who just goes to the doctor unknowingly and starts popping antibiotics and gets mild relief for a short period of time. I've always found the GI doc a very interesting one, because as much like you mentioned, having respect for the doctor, which is obviously always an important thing, especially when you're talking to the client is the middleman there, right? Between us and the, and at the end of the day, we've done nothing but talk about stress here and how much that can, play a role here, and ultimately causing more stress by making that person the middleman is never a good thing, but you know, it works both ways there. And it's always like, you know, the GI doc hearing what we might be telling a client, and now what the GI doc is saying to the patient, you know, about, you know, a GI map or whatever, herbal antimicrobials, and how some of these things are just, you know, whatever, you know, cockamamie schemes and, you know, things of that nature. It can be a tough communication to have with the client sometimes. So that's definitely something that that we've run into plenty. Let me ask, is there anything that you have seen here most recently on a more consistent basis? It's hard a question to ask, because obviously we're looking at gut health and we're looking at just about anything as it relates to our clients in this space. The reality is there's no one size fits all here. There's no like significantly reoccurring situation that's so consistent from person to person to person, right? Everybody's situation is a little bit different and comes with different nuances and reasons why and different pathways in terms of healing. But is there anything that you see from a gut health perspective here recently that has been reoccurring and or seemingly getting worse in as far as general population is concerned?
Yes. So as a whole, and this again, it might just be the people that are coming to me, and I should have told you this early on, I live under a rock. I don't watch the news. I don't scroll TikTok. So if there are trends, I probably don't know what they are. So I don't know if that is like important to say here. And I like my rock that I live under. Sometimes clients will be like, did you see that these people are doing this parasite cleanse? And I'm like, no, let me see that so that I can tell you if it's legit or not. Right. But I would say, you know, there's been a big, big rise in just people that I've been getting that have a lot of autoimmune conditions. And I'm going to bring it back to the gut, because the gut is a big driver of this, right? Your gut houses like 60%+ of your immune system. And there's something that's called, you know, the buzzy term for it is leaky gut, but really it's called intestinal permeability. And basically what this means is that the walls of your intestines, they aren't as tightly bound as they should be, where, you know, in a normal circumstance, your intestinal wall, they're bound by these tight junctions, and they only really allow nutrients to go through. Nutrients go to your bloodstream. They feed literally everything in your body. We need that, right? But when we have this leaky gut, there are gaps in those tight junctions that allow bigger particles to get through. So obviously, you know, your nutrients are still making their way, but so are pathogens, bacteria, viruses, and antibodies. And this is where we see a very, very large increase in food intolerance-like symptoms. And you may not even be able to identify what food it is, but that's where, you know, I've seen a lot more people who come to me very intolerant to things like gluten, especially, right? Because the development of celiac is autoimmune. So the biggest thing that I'll always focus on is making sure that these like natural barrier systems that are a big part of our immune system are intact. So that GI lining, because if it's not, you know, food particles, especially things like proteins from gluten, proteins from casein, and this isn't me saying not to eat protein, they come into the intestinal lining and cause irritation. So then antibodies are produced to kill the invader. Your body doesn't know what the heck's going on. It's just like, all right, this shouldn't be here. Antibodies, white blood cells, all of that come in and do your job. So that's when we develop that heightened immune response, which, and again, some people are going to be more sensitive to this than others. That's where we can see the development of autoimmune conditions throughout the body. And then, you know, longer term GI issues, because we have to think about why these GI issues start. And I know we kind of talked about this a little bit, but they start with stress. And stress can mean so many different things, right? It comes from so many different places, and I'm not even going to begin to get into that right now. But stress causes this damage to your intestinal lining. Stress causes your stomach acid levels to be low. When your stomach acid's low, not only are you going to have a very hard time digesting your food, like protein and extracting nutrients, you're going to be bloated, you're going to be feeling yucky and constipated and all of that. But stomach acid's also a first line of defense in your immune system. So it's not able to properly kill off pathogens and things like that. So I think the important thing is always to come back to like, well, why are these things happening in your gut? And stress is going to be the biggest reason. And I don't even know if I answered your question. So that's where see a lot. Sometimes people don't even need testing. We just replenish stomach acid. We get them to chill the hell out, get their habits to be better. We do some light GI lining support. And this is something that I think coaches need to start learning about more before they're just like, $400 test, here we go, let's see what's wrong. Because there's so much we can do before we even cross that bridge of do you need testing? But I would say, you know, those are things that come up a lot. Almost every client that comes to me at this point thinks that they have a gut issue. I would say, you know, 50-60% end up having one. The other, you know, 40-50 don't. We just need to like add some support so that way they don't end up with an infection. Because the main reason we have these infections is because of this internal downregulation and damage. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I do think that, again, that chronic stress is the biggest driver. And that is something that is the most prevalent. You know, there's not one like gut thing that I can say I see more than others. I've been seeing a lot of E. coli lately, which is concerning, but otherwise.
Is it vacation time? Where's everybody getting it is vacation time. Yeah, I think everybody's going back from Mexico in spring break.
Before you talk, Tim, I just wanted to say I've heard that spiel of leaky gut and autoimmune a billion times from Tim, from Austin, from Trey, but like the way that you just presented that, it was like, oh, like you, I don't know. You made it sound so simple, even though it's not, but I just wanted to say that I really liked the way that you kind of explained that. I'm sure a lot of people listening were like, ooh, that makes sense.
Thank you. I didn't even use my visual that I have.
That's something that we've been on for a little while here. We actually had somebody on, I don't know, a couple months ago, specifically on the rise in hyperpermeability that we're seeing. So it's one of those things where you can even see that within the reference ranges that they have on the GI map and how those have changed dramatically over the course of the last three or so years there. Definitely a big one. Any tips that you want to leave here before we wrap things up for people as far as, you know, maintenance of a healthy gut or maybe starting to improve a gut that might be showing some early signs of dysfunction?
Yes. So this is something we could do a whole podcast on, honestly.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I always go from like basic to advanced here. So if you are somebody that doesn't really have structure with their nutrition, if you feel like you are running on caffeine and fight or flight, high cortisol all the time, you know, those are going to be the biggest things for you to improve, right? Improve diet quality, make sure you're eating at least 3 to 4 balanced meals per day, chewing your food, trying not to eat in a rush, chilling with the caffeine. Like those are always going to be the basics, especially chewing your food. Like I feel like whenever I used to hear somebody say that, I'd be like, chew your food. Like what difference is that going to make? It really does make a difference because not only like is the enzymatic part of digestion, it starts in your mouth. Like digestion starts before you even put food in your mouth. It can start when you anticipate food or you smell food, but chewing your food is the first part of breaking it down. So you don't do that, it's going to be a lot harder for the rest of your body to digest. And then you're going to have undigested food in your poop, which isn't that uncommon. So I always say like chew each bite into what feels like baby food. Cause I'm very visual. So I need to like picture it. I'm not going to sit there and count 30 bites. I don't know about you guys, but that's ridiculous. So, chew into baby food. That's going to be a big one. As far as like probiotics, should you take one? Should you not? This is a question I get all the time. Most people do not need a probiotic. And I do not recommend a probiotic to every client. When a client comes to me with GI issues, I will often start one, but not the general ones that come up when you search probiotic on Amazon. Those are more of like a lacto-bifido blend, which can be fantastic for somebody that has low bacteria, has maybe some mild infection, or just wants to take one because they don't eat a lot of fermented food. But if you do suspect, you know, infection, usually I'll start with a Sac Boulardii or a spore-based bacteria. And reason being, they're not going to exacerbate or feed any potential overgrowths, and they can survive if you do end up needing a kill-off antimicrobial antibiotic. Other things that you can do, I'm a big, big fan, and this is what I've been doing recently because I've been having gut issues again, so fun, is downing herbal tea like it's my job. Herbal tea, herbs in general, however you want to use them, things like ginger and turmeric and licorice root and slippery elm and marshmallow, I don't care if you season your food with them, you drink them in herbal tea, which I think is a lot easier. There is so much benefit there. I mean, it's just like, that's how medicine started, right? So
yeah.
That's one thing. Like if you can have one cup of tea per day, again, ginger is going to be great for constipation and overall inflammation in the gut. If you're someone that has like mucousy stool, light colored stool, maybe pain on your right side, that could be a sluggish liver gallbladder thing. Dandelion root is going to be your best friend. And then I really like the throat coat blend. It's made to be used for like when you're sick and you have a sore throat. But if you have any like reflux or like burny tummy aches or anything like that, it's just a very well put together blend, and that can reduce inflammation and be a good starting point on its own.
That's by traditional medicines. Just so people know, you can look that up on Amazon, the throat coat tea.
Yeah. So those are some like basics. And then if somebody is dealing with like constipation or diarrhea, you can mess with meal timing. And I have a lot of posts on this as far as like constipation, you know, space meals out more to give your digestive tract time to actually process food. If you're having diarrhea, smaller, more simple meals, usually in that acute flare-up setting, that are more closely spaced together to actually slow motility down. And then, I mean, there are so many different directions we could go in depending on what that person's, you know, symptoms are. Apple cider vinegar is often helpful for people and cheap and effective. It can help raise stomach acid level. It can help with blood sugar regulation. I'll often have people do like a baking soda burp test at home to assess stomach acid function, cheap and effective, not necessarily, you know, the most accurate thing, but it has been helpful as a tool in my practice. And then outside of that, just like staying off of Google and stop going down rabbit holes that are making you more stressed. Like if you're somebody that is spending so much of your mental load, so much of your day stressing about what's going on with you, just hire somebody. Like just hire somebody and let them stress for you. Let them teach you how to overcome this and how to sustain gut health, right? At the end of the day, all gut health really is the state of your digestive tract, your intestines, your accessory organs, liver, pancreas, all of that, and the trillions of microorganisms that live in there functioning in harmony, right? Being able to absorb nutrients, being able to digest your food and eliminate waste properly. So that's where it's going to look different for everybody, but you know, we want to get to a point where our diet is as diverse as possible and you're in a place where your body can handle as much food as you can, right? Like food intolerance symptoms usually can be overcome. They're not something you have to live with. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, Google's a bitch nowadays with the gut health stuff. It really is, because it does seem like that is very black and white. Like, you're either going to get a WebMD type of very general, not very helpful information as it relates to gut health, or you're going to find some crazy, in some cases, website that tells you, you know, that you have to do, like, everything's a kill phase and SIBO and, you know, like, or everything's H. pylori, and it's so specific to one individual thing, when I think you'd agree, and most people would agree, that, like, at the end of the day, your case is very individual to your lifestyle, you know, what's going on. I just had a client that went through this, where she's struggling right now with the Google searches and trying to figure out what's wrong. And I'm like, listen, you are a teacher. She's been working with me for 3 years, right? And every single summer, everything is perfect. Everything's moving along perfectly fine. No issues whatsoever. No constipation, no reflux, nothing. No issues whatsoever from a digestive standpoint. School year starts. She's out of the house by 4 a.m., doesn't get home until 7 p.m. every day, misses that pooping window because she's in class all day, and then tries to go to the bathroom. And now she's constipated. That constipation tends to build up. And now we're having all types of different issues that stem from that that we're working on here. Obviously, hyperpermeability is going to be part of that. But the bottom line there is that her situation, even though she can look online and look at all these different nuances and details that relates to different gut health stuff, the bottom line is her issue is staring her right in front of her face. And it's a lifestyle component, just like most gut health issues are going to start with. So, you know, it's one of those things where usually the answer is a lot. I don't want to say simple, because that's not simple when you have a job that requires a certain amount. But again, the answer might be more directly in front of you and your path on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to something you're going to find on the internet. And getting somebody to help you analyze from the outside looking in might be the easiest pathway for your individual needs. So is there actually, I guess, Marina, do you want to close it out before we have her in, you know, do, yeah, I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought this was a great episode as usual. But yeah, drop your Instagram where people can find you. So let the fans know.
So on Instagram, I'm Coach Haley_RD. That's mainly where you can find me. I do have a podcast. It's called the Girls Fuel Podcast on Apple and Spotify, but otherwise I keep it pretty simple, and that's it.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Yeah,
I was just going to say, hopefully we do get a chance to have you back. I know I really wanted to get a chance to kind of get some background and get to know you. Now we know that you used to be a giant pothead before college. you went to college. Yeah, there you go. Went to college. I didn't know you were a competitor. Honestly, I feel like, you know, watching from the Instagram to getting to know you a little bit now, I do feel like there's a completely and totally different picture I'm painting for you now. So it was cool to get you on and get to know you a little bit. And maybe we can reach out here soon and have you back on for something that's a little bit more specific in terms of a topic.
Yeah. That sounds awesome. And it sounds like you just didn't scroll far enough back on my Instagram.
Maybe.
All righty. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Make sure to share with a friend that has weird poops. And we'll catch you guys next week.